Welcome to the Social Podcast, where no discussion or debate is off limits.
It is Thursday, 1 month to Christmas if you celebrate. Just wanted to drop that in there. Welcome to The Social. We've got a lot to get to today, so let's dive in. If you were watching the news, then you know this news. It was big. Yesterday, three white men in Georgia were found all guilty of murdering Ahmaud Arbery while he was out for a jog. Now, the shooting was caught on camera and fueled outrage across the world. We want to react to this story. I think a lot of people around the world are discussing this. How did you feel when the verdict came down?
Probably a lot of people felt relief, considering what happened earlier in the week with Kyle Rittenhouse. So relief for sure. But still, I mean, I think that you should always feel anger at what happened to Ahmaud Arbery and how he was killed. So that's number one. I am also still enraged by what happened during the closing statements, particularly some statements made by one of the defense attorneys. They were suggesting that to position Ahmaud Arbery as a victim when he made certain choices is not right. Here's the exact quote. Before you put it up, though, I just want to warn people that this is very disturbing and it's disgusting. So sorry about that. Now we can put it up with that disclaimer. So here is the exact quote. Turning Ahmaud Arbery into a victim after the choices he made does not reflect the reality of what brought Ahmaud Arbery to Satilla Shores in his khaki shorts with no socks to cover his long, dirty toenails.
She said that.
In a courtroom.
Yeah.
Like, it is on record. It is on court record now, on television. And so she said that in order to persuade the jury. So think about the reasoning.
As a mitigating factor.
Exactly. So it's disgusting. The words are disgusting, but the purpose behind it is even more disgusting. To persuade 12 people that a black man's appearance essentially warranted the circumstances that led to his death. Mm-hmm. It is vile.
Yeah, I got to add to that because the jury comes from that area. Satilla Shores is the richer side of town. So in addition to making comments that he should have been covered up, she's also making a very clear line in the sand. What is someone like him doing over there? Mm. Satilla Shores is one of the wealthier postal codes of Glynn County. And Glynn County in Georgia, which Georgia's the South, we know the long history of slavery in the South in America, and Georgia is one of those places. So she's making a distinction also.
Yep.
Oh, did he ask for it? Because what was he doing on that side of the track?
I don't think that was an also. I think that was the point. It's not that his toenails were dirty. It's that his toenails were black. I mean, I think that's the whole point that she's making there. And the fact that she would say that in open court as a mitigating factor means that, A, she believes it. That's not like a normal, you know, when you're a defense lawyer, you have to put forward a vigorous defense within the parameters of the law. When you're making a statement like that as a mitigating factor, that means you actually believe that that is a mitigating factor. And don't forget when that happened. It happened during the Trump administration. And don't forget that we are maybe 2 years away from being back into that.
Don't say it, Candy.
No,
don't say
Listen,
it, Candy.
I have not done a gig stateside since Trump went into power, and I don't see myself going anytime soon.
Even though Biden's in office?
Yes, I'm scared. He might be in office, but the temperature is the same.
There was a really great and harrowing New York Times opinion piece written yesterday by a black author named Dante Stewart. And he recalled a story when he was barely 16, and he was in South Carolina. And he was going to go and visit, I believe, a family member. And he was traveling with his two brothers, his sister, and I believe his cousin. And they had some car trouble. They heard a funky noise in the back. And so they pulled over like anyone would do on the side of the road. And his older brother got out to go and check it out. Where they were parked in front of was a trailer park. And there was a trailer right there. And this white man, older man, came out and started yelling. And his brother got nervous and understandably started yelling back. And then I guess realized the situation he was in and ran back to the car quickly, and they took off. That man shot at the car.
Mm. And the white man?
The white man shot at their car with five basically young people, young black people in the car. Now, you can imagine they survived, but you can imagine the outcome if they hadn't or if one hadn't. And you've got this, again, the location. you've got a situation where it's one man's word against a group of kids. You know, why are you here? What are you doing? I felt threatened. I have my right to defend my land. All those kinds of mentality. Mm-hmm. You've got racism mixed in with gun issues, mixed in with, I mean,
driving
while black. All of
that. Wow, what a crime.
And it's easy to think, okay, this is only something that can happen in the States, but I'm reminded immediately of Colton Bushy.
Yes, and you are bringing to mind for me a very personal story. When I was just a kid, my parents wanted me to see this country, and they put me in the half-ton truck, and they drove me from northern New Brunswick all the way to Victoria, B.C., the summer after grade 5, so I could see the country. And I remember one day driving through a place out west, and we were going to pull over and take a hotel, which we didn't usually do. We stayed in tents. And my father is he was a very brave man. He wasn't scared of anything. But I remember this so clearly. We were pulling over, and I could hear the truck tires like leaving the pavement and hitting the dirt. It's a beautiful sunny day. And there were like 4 or 5 white men sitting on the front porch of this hotel. And my father's window was down. And my father looked at them and they were looking at my father. And I remember thinking, what am I seeing on my dad's face? I don't recognize it. And then I just heard the truck tires speed back up, and we pulled back out. And we drove for about another 4 hours, and we pitched our tent. And later in the tent, when they thought I was asleep, my father said to my mother, I knew by looking at those men and the way they were looking at us, this wasn't a place for an Indian man with a white woman and a beige baby. And I figured they could get rid of us and our truck without a moment's notice. And in that moment, I realized I just saw my father scared for the first time.
Wow. And I'll tell you what a story to share, and that fear that you understood as such a young child, and that moment, because you lose a bit of innocence.
Yes, you do.
In that moment, and you lose the innocence when you see your hero, I'm assuming your father,
yeah,
scared. That's unnerving, to say the least, of what he experienced.
It's also, yeah, like, you know, who gets to be scared.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting sort of balance here, because legitimately and for a reason, people like Ahmaud Arbery, the story you told, and your family got to be scared. But the fear of white people is prioritized, mm-hmm, because that's the self-defense role. It actually reminds me of an article that Ibram X. Kendi wrote for The Atlantic when Ahmaud Arbery was killed, Who Has the Right to Be Afraid? This is about, mm, the defense was based on fear in this case. They were afraid for their community. Same thing with Kyle Rittenhouse. He was afraid.
Yes.
He was acting in self-defense. Who gets to defend themselves and who gets to be afraid? Even that is a privilege, mm-hmm, in many parts of the world, including
Excellent
this one.
And can we talk about video for a second? Because let's remember, this may have not even ever gone to court. This case only got onto the world stage, mm, when the video by one of the now accused murderers
convicted
murders was released.
Yeah.
Do you remember that there was someone in the, there was people who were in very strong positions of power who were actually protecting these men, one of which was a former police officer. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of protections around them, and there was hubbubs around the story, but there was no convictions. There was not even an investigation until the video came out.
I didn't feel confident, though.
But even, isn't that scary to say?
We've had videos.
Yes.
Hello, Rodney. Mm-hmm. Like, we watched those cops beat him to a pulp, and it didn't get...
But doesn't that say something when there is such clear evidence in this case of the video that there was a man out for a jog,
mm,
who was essentially lynched in the streets?
Mm-hmm.
It's what the video shows. And the fact that there were still so many people, me included, that were really nervous yesterday,
that
a guilty verdict wouldn't, mm-hmm, come. What kind of world are we living in when it's there in black and white? The George Floyd case was the same. We were worried that Chauvin wasn't going to be found guilty, but we watched him murder him on camera.
Well, now we wait for sentencing, right?
Yeah.
We're going to find out,
yes,
what this looks like on another level. But certainly, unfortunately, I don't think this is the last story that we'll hear like this.
No, it's not.
And where does it go from here? I mean, if you don't have a video... And.
Good luck.
Let's talk about stretch marks. We all have them. Even supermodel Ashley Graham, who clapped back at a commenter on Instagram who said her pregnancy stretch marks may affect her career. All right.
Wow.
Idiot. How do you feel about stretch marks?
First of all, that's Ashley Graham. That's one of the most beautiful women on the planet.
Seriously.
So whatever with the stretch marks. I also feel like for you people who have made human beings, once you create people, It does not matter what your stomach looks like. You made a person. You get a buy on everything. So it just makes me crazy. I just feel like in this world, people are too zoomed in on what they look like. I'm very fortunate. I was raised in a house where my mother did not care about looks. She didn't talk about them. She didn't talk about her own. She didn't talk about mine. And so I just grew up kind of knowing that that wasn't the thing. And sometimes I wonder, was it the era? But like my really, really good friend Lee has a 10-year-old girl. And, you know, his wife is a judge. He's a lawyer. That little girl who's adorable does not care one bit about what she looks like. She's got, you know, videos of her playing the bass, rocking out to some GNR on bass. She's a great soccer player. She's into all of that, but she's not spending any time worrying about what she looks like.
Well, she's 10.
She's 10.
I mean, that's the thing, is that there is something that I remember. I kind of exploded, I felt like, into puberty, and that's, I definitely got stretch marks on my thighs, I think on my breasts, and I did feel kind of ashamed of them, because everything you saw in magazines was this perfectly airbrushed skin. So you're constantly, as a kid, I mean, even now to some degree, you cross-compare. But thank goodness we do live in this era where now there's all kinds of women online, including Ashley Graham, showing them. There's this great artist, and she's not the only one. Her name's Sarah Shaquil, and she does these beautiful pictures where she puts like sparkles all over them. And I just think that it's really, you're seeing a lot more representation. I mean, to that woman who wrote to Ashley Graham, I don't even know why Ashley Graham responded, because it's like,
seriously,
again, the woman is, you don't know who this person is. It's one random comment. And the fact is that she might have been right. At one point in time, you wouldn't have been in Vogue magazine showing your stretch marks. Right? Like that could have been a thing where she might have had a career over. Ashley Graham will not, thank goodness. She'll be around forever, and we love her for it.
And wasn't beauty boring back then, though? That's why I fell in love with Jeannie Becker, because I thought beauty back then was so pedestrian, but Jeannie Becker's beauty was like so sophisticated. And as a little girl up in Northern New Brunswick, I was like, okay, here's someone that looks like she's got an interesting life.
Right.
Not just one in a crowd of 10 million people that look the
same. Yeah, but here's the thing. I think you can't discount that societal pressure. I was very young when I started to get stretch marks, and none of my friends had them. I think I was very, very early when I got them, and I was very ashamed of them, would always try to cover it up, and probably cover it up for most of my life, because there's great makeups out there, and you know, I was like, this is great. Certainly, I think as a lot of women will attest who have had a child, and your body does wild things. You can't imagine that it can actually everything stretches, and then amazingly, it comes back. You do have other marks left behind, and I only really started to embrace my body after Marquez was born, because I just didn't think my body was capable of that. And so now, because you know I love me my two-piece bikinis, the less material, the better. Thank you very much. And I'm very proud to not cover up my stretch marks. And I have a lot, but I'm really proud when I walk by, like if you're at a resort or you're at the beach and there's a bunch of young women and I have my little itty-bitty on, I hope they see my stretch marks, because it's something that has taken my entire life to work on, because I cannot discount that, yes, I have been affected by the pressure to be perfect like a lot of women feel. I can't just say one day, I just should be proud and ignore it. It doesn't work like that. And I do see it with my daughter now. We're a very radically open family. She sees my whole body, and it's telling her messages that I didn't hear when I was younger. And she has this really cool book. I just thought of it. Her teacher, Ren, recommended it, and it's called Bodies Are Cool.
Oh, nice.
And I'll tell you, parents, it's a celebration of all kinds of bodies. And I looked at this and said, man, this is what I needed as a kid. This is what I needed as a teen. And it's giving me so much life. And I'm 44 holding up this book. And Marquez is like, okay, it's just a book, Mom. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. It's really a celebration. And I just didn't have that growing up. Just didn't.
I think, when I think about stretch marks, I think about my own mother, and she mythologized her stretch marks. Like, she turned them into like a really great story. As a kid, I'd lie on her hip and I'd like trace them. And then she'd talk about the day that she says they came. She said she had no stretch marks until she was like a week from giving birth. Then she ate a bowl of cherries. And that was like, I loved the cherries apparently. And I expanded so big that day. It, like in one day, I was a 9-pound baby. I was a gigantic baby. So it goes into the mythology of why I was such a big baby and a healthy baby and all of that. And so she said that the stretch marks developed that one day. She woke up after the bowl of cherries. And so in my mind, I kept associating stretch marks with cherries. Then she'd go around telling everyone around town, just stretch marks are caused by cherries. She's that fake news person. Like, she's one of those people where she's like, fake news about, like, cherries. Oh, don't eat cherries when you're pregnant. It gives you stretch marks. But to me, it just, like, all of that is, like, so heartwarming. I associate stretch marks with beautiful memories of my mother creating a mythology around her pregnancy and her birth and me as a baby. And
where's the book?
I think that that is something really special that you can do for your children.
Can I leave the last
one? Where's the book? Lainey and the Giant Bowl of Cherries.
Yes, it's a kid's book.
Every child needs it. We'll be waiting. Get on it.
It's a body positive book. Last word is to Athena, who writes, anything that happens to your body as a result of producing another human being is a badge of honor.
Yes.
Embrace it.
Okay, we're moving to fashion now. Do you think this look right here is going to catch on? NBA star Kyle Kuzma had social media buzzing when he showed up to a game just like this. What do we think about this look?
I love it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually thought, you know, when your eyes playing tricks on you?
Yeah.
You know, where you're like, did someone alter that photo? Because I was like, is that a real photo? I looked at it and I was like, that's perfect for a Canadian winter. Obviously, that's fine. But right away, I thought of
Lenny Kravitz.
You remember when he had the oversized scarf?
Yeah.
It did make me think, like, this is a hazard.
And that
then
looks
I went
now.
Back to cut. It's normal now because he's wearing basically a throw blanket.
It was great.
But it's a hazard. It could be a hazard if you're, like, in the car. You know, have you slammed the door? Stuff's hanging out of
hot.
The car. And you get
right.
So it could be hazardous, but it looks very warm and cozy.
How do you take care of your bathroom hygiene with those sleeves? How is he, like...
I think it was just for the tunnel.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing, is that... He, what people were like talking and laughing about created a fashion moment. He actually has a stylist. The stylist has talked about this piece. The stylist brought him a selection of pieces. Kyle was like, we're going to try that one first. I can't wait to wear it. And the tunnel, when you arrive in the arena as an athlete, is a runway now. Look at him. This is like a person treating it as a runway.
It's really
there are going on. Look at the camera flashes.
It's the wide neck. It's
a
wide neck.
That's a fashion walk. He doesn't care that people think it's ridiculous.
No,
this is for the fashion moment.
It brings me joy to watch him do it, but I gotta say, when you zoom out, if we were aliens looking at this, it's pretty funny looking. Like, he looks 2 million
don't forget,
too big.
He's 6'10".
Yeah.
So think about how massive.
Oh my God.
That sweater is
good
like
point.
A family of four could tent.
Yeah. Good
and
point.
It's sloppy to wear anything like that.
It's like $1,600, that sweater. It's
Raf
Simons.
Just because it's expensive doesn't mean it's like necessarily good.
Saying is that, like, these athletes are now, like celebrities, choosing an item of clothing for
provocation. Would you wear
this,
Kwame?
A foo?
Who's...
Kwame?
No offense to Kwame.
He's ever seen.
No offense to Kwame, but Kwame's not a celebrity. Like, celebrities can wear things.
He's a celebrity. He hates it. Okay.
Oh, my gosh. I still can't get over the wide neck.
Subscribe to The Social Podcast so you don't miss a fiery debate. Until next time, socialites. We'll